Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be joined today by Brooks Barnes. Mr. Barnes is a staff reporter at the New York Times and has a really great piece out on a part of the industry that has changed a lot over the last couple of years here, but I think nobody has really gotten good numbers on it. And he finally got some good numbers, and we're gonna talk about those today, but also just the shift in general. And that has to do with premium video on demand. Now, premium video on demand, I will ask you to explain here in a moment what that is compared to other types of video on demand, streaming on demand, whatever, sure. And all that. But thanks for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your asking. I've been sort of hammering on Universal for a while to give me some numbers, in part because they kept complaining that when I wrote about box office, you know, it was taking an outdated view. We make a lot of money on PVOD. You don't understand. That's coming from the Focus people. I was like, okay, well, great. Well, tell me how much money you're making. So, you know, we don't have a lot of numbers, but we have some. And so to explain the offering, you know, since the 90s, people have been able to order movies on demand through their TV set or, more recently, iTunes or Google Play. And that usually happens after the exclusive theatrical window of about 90 days, right? So it's about... These days, it can be $6 to rent a movie then. It can be $15 to buy one. But what Universal did during the pandemic is move that way up. Actually, they still offer that traditional VOD window, but they created a new one they called Premium VOD or PVOD. And that can happen after as little as 17 days, and they charge much, much more.
There are a couple of different things to unpack here. So, one of the things that is worth discussing is the breakdown of the theatrical window. You know, this is a thing that the theater owners have fought for a long time. They wanted to keep a 90-day window of exclusivity in theaters. And during the pandemic, obviously, that was a hard thing to keep going because you had folks who wouldn't go to theaters. You had cities where theaters weren't even open. So it was hard to maintain that window. And one of the things that you mentioned in your story that I had kind of forgotten about but was reminded is that AMC negotiated a cut of the revenue on these things, right?
Yes. Yeah, so some of the backstory was Universal said at the beginning of the pandemic, well, we're just going to make these three movies available entirely on demand. Trolls was one of them, the sequel to the animated movie. And AMC sort of stumped its feet and made it very clear that they would not play anything that infringed on their exclusive window. So, you know, it's part of brinkmanship negotiations from these guys. And ultimately, Universal cut them in. We don't know how much. It's a small percentage. So they get a bit of that premium VOD money, which basically Universal has then made other deals with other theater chains, and it makes them sort of grudgingly okay with having that window shortened.
Because one of the things that's really interesting about premium video on demand is especially with how Universal is using it. And I feel like Universal is doing it differently than most of the other studios. They seem to be more aggressively moving stuff on the PVOD, right?
Yeah, the other studios, I think in terms of time, is that what you mean by aggressive?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I think Paramount may do it at 30 days in some instances. Warner Brothers has been more 60 days after their whole Project Popcorn day and date experiment, we'll call it.
Which was, remind folks what that, HBO Max did.
Yeah, during the pandemic, Warner Brothers, HBO Max, they said that they would release an entire year's worth of movies simultaneously in theaters and on HBO Max. So that's a little confusing because HBO Max is not video on demand, it's streaming, right?
But so Universal has been really again, kind of aggressively shortening that window. I mean, there was just news this week that the new Fast and Furious movie is coming to PVOD, I believe, on Friday, June 9th. Isn't that it? I didn't see that, but
that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And you have to remember, and I didn't mention this in the story just because of length, but, you know, Universal is owned by a cable company that has a video on demand business. So they have for a long time been the most aggressive in wanting to shorten that window, speed movies to their customers for sale.
It's interesting to look at the strategy here just because I understand where the theaters are coming from. I understand where the studios are coming from. But the most fascinating part of your story was the Universal saying that they think they have found a new audience here.
Maybe a brand new customer. Yeah.
Basically a brand new type of customer, right? Explain the logic there on Universal's end.
So the big question on offering this as soon as 17 days into theaters, which would be about 3 weekends, was, will it cannibalize ticket sales? Will people be less willing to go out and go to a theater when they know they can see that movie in just a few weeks at home? Secondly, how much would it cannibalize the downstream traditional VOD business, which is still quite sizable? And Universal has said now after 3 years that they found almost no impact on ticket sales. And in my sort of crunching a bunch of numbers using just ComScore data, it looks like they're right. And in some cases, ticket sales have been stronger after the arrival of PVOD. And we can talk about maybe why that is. And they say, although they would not give me specifics on how much it has cut into the traditional downstream VOD, but they say that it's small. Mm-hmm. So we have to take their word on that. But even if it's 25%, let's say, which isn't small to me, but let's just use that hypothetically, that's still a lot of new money coming in. And they, in talking to Donna Langley and her folks, they say that they think it's a new customer who's interested in the movie, not price conscious or less price conscious, willing to, but wants to see the movie sooner. Mm-hmm. It's either that person or it's a, you know, rabid fan, went to the theater and doesn't want to wait.
I'm curious to see if I'm curious if they gave you any breakdown on the difference between family behaviors and non-family behaviors, because one of the numbers that jumped out to me was, look, here's the movies that have made the most money on PVOD for Universal are Super Mario Brothers Movie, Sing 2, I think it was, one of the Sing Trolls.
All of the big franchises, right,
yeah,
are, you know, Minions, Rise of Gru, F9, Jurassic World Dominion. I actually have a list here of the biggest ones. Some of them, Super Mario Brothers has taken in $75 million already. That's the biggest under this model, with, I guess, if you accepting Trolls, which has got an asterisk of its own because it never played in theaters.
Sure.
So, but some of the other ones were The Black Phone, Megan, Nobody, which is a Focus movie, News of the World, that the Tom Hanks drama, sort of pandemic impacted. Families for sure. You can rent that or pay that price and just play it over and over and over again, right?
Well, I'm curious. So one of the reasons I asked this is because I'm curious if they provided a breakdown on rentals versus purchases, because I would imagine. So if I'm sitting at home with my kids who are like, we want to watch Super Mario Brothers again, I know in my head that means they want to watch it every day. For the next week. Yeah, exactly. So that then pushes me to spend the extra $5 or $10 or whatever and purchase as opposed to rent. I mean, do you have any sense of how that dynamic is really playing out?
Yeah, they didn't get into that, unfortunately. But the prices are pretty steep early in there. It's as much as $25 to rent for 48 hours and $30 to buy. So right. if you're looking at a repeat family offering, that $30 is actually probably pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, I know as somebody who has sometimes had to do these things for work, I think to myself, well, I guess I might as well spend the extra $5 because if I ever watch it again, that's going to be the cost of a VOD rental down the line or DVD or Blu-ray or whatever. I might as well just do that. So let's talk about the actual financial benefit here. Before we get to that, actually, you had mentioned what you have thoughts on why some of these things do increase ticket sales as we give
ticket sales a boost. Yeah. I talked to them about marketing because one of the things that studio executives had been saying for a long time is that we need to be smarter with our marketing money. And if we offer VOD closer to the theatrical release, we can compress some of that marketing spend, some of the, overlap. And they said that they were not spending less in marketing overall, but they felt like, having moved money from, the traditional VOD window, basically, up, that second boost of marketing, telling people that you can buy it in the home, had some bleed over to people realizing, oh, it can also see it in theaters, but also in some cases, like with Puss in Boots, right? That another family movie that was available on via PVOD very early, that word of mouth started helping the theatrical run also.
I mean, how does that actually, did they get into how they think that actually works? Because if I'm, if I haven't gone to see it in theaters yet, but it's also at home, I'm not sure why I would take my kids to see that.
Well, I guess it depends on how much you want, your various forms of babysitting, an activity or whatever, my neighbor said, they bought it and their kids won't stop watching it. So let's plan that Saturday day after all. It's kind of like an insurance policy almost. Like, mm-hmm. You don't want to pay and go through the hassle of going through a theater unless someone tells you or you have a pretty high confidence that it's going to be a payoff. I mean, that's mm-hmm. why we have so many sequels.
The actual financials here are also really interesting for the studios because one of the things that you internalize when you spend a lot of time looking at studio financials is, all right, a $300 million gross isn't actually $300 million to the studio. It's you split that with the theaters and then there are distribution fees and, foreign splits are different from domestic splits.
Right.
But VOD is actually a really good deal in terms of the revenue splits for the studios, right?
Yes, it's a much higher margin. So they keep about 80%, even a little more in some cases, depending on the platform. And then the rest of that balance goes to, the online store and then that small slice to the theater owner.
Yeah.
And so compared that to 50-50 or even 40% that they're keeping on ticket sales, you can see why they suddenly like that. They like this business a lot. They want to build it.
Yeah. And the other thing that you mentioned briefly, but I think is really worth hitting on here is that, Universal in particular is owned by Universal Comcast is all one big happy family, right? There's, Focus Features, Universal Comcast, they're all kind of in. So that's essentially another stream of revenue for the company. The cut that the cable companies keep.
Right. Yeah. In that case, if you're buying it through Comcast, my mom, for example, has Comcast. We were just there. Okay, sure. I'll rent that movie. I'll pay. I forget what we paid for. Probably F9. I don't know. I want to disclose what we paid for. But yeah, that's them going to Comcast. You're right.
And another kind of interesting little nugget in this story is the way that this is benefiting smaller art house pictures, right? So Focus is the prestige arm of Universal, let's call it, right. And they have found, if not quite a replacement for DVD revenue, at least a little bonus.
Yeah. So with Focus movies, it's much, much thinner in terms of profitability, right? The budgets are smaller, the profit is often smaller, all of that. So if you have even a couple million dollars in added profit from PVOD, they're saying that can really make the difference financially for some of these little movies or comedies, dramas that have not been doing well post-pandemic. And it has allowed them to continue in that business where most other studios have cut way back, right? You know, 10 releases theatrically a year, maybe 12, 15. Universal has done, I think they have 26 planned for this year. So they say that added money, without it, they would have to cut back. Now, The asterisk there is that they need the theatrical buy-in. So the messaging is to sort of theaters, like, let us do this and we'll continue giving you a large volume of movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, has there been any pushback in the, now that the pandemic is, you know, over and folks, if the box office revenue is recovering to kind of, if not quite pre-pandemic levels, close enough that it makes sense to keep things in theaters. I mean, have they experienced any buyer's regret on the part of the theaters? Have the theater owners pushed back and said, we need you to stop doing this? Or what?
I didn't find any of that. I talked to a couple theater owners, one CEO, and they didn't want to talk about it publicly because they still think it kind of undercuts their business, at least if to some customers. But they seem pretty happy with getting a slice. Mm-hmm. No other studios have really followed so far. So at least to the degree that Universal has. So whether if there was a big herd mentality up to that 17 days, I think that might change the calculus.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you reported in your story, it's a quote from Julia Alexander, for a previous guest on The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood, one of our favorites here. We love Julia. But she told you that they have at Parrot Analytics, where she works, seen some impact on streaming, on the audience for a streaming movie after it is available on PVOD in this early window, right? Can you talk about that a little bit and explain exactly what that means and what that effect might look like?
Sure. So the whole thing here is trying to maximize value for each film, right? So we can get as many people to buy a ticket as we can. Then we want to have this new window revenue stream, premium VOD. Then we sell it on traditional and on VOD and DVD. Then after that, it goes to streaming. And what she was pointing out is when you sell it so early in this premium VOD setting, that can impact negatively the value of the movie to the streaming service in terms of subscriber acquisition. Mm-hmm. More people, it's just sort of, you know, when you think about it, it makes sense that if more people have already rented it, own it, they're going to be less likely to sign up for a Peacock subscription when it arrives.
Right, which makes sense. I think we can all understand that intuitively. At the same time, I've always been, this is one of my long-running theories/hobby horses, is that I have never been entirely convinced how many people are signing up for streaming services for movies as opposed to original TV shows, which I feel like is where the real money is. But I don't know. I can imagine the folks at Peacock going to the folks at Universal and being like, you're killing us here. You're killing us. You gotta help us out. But
I'm sure, right? And again, why is Universal so hot on this where others are not? It's also part of how that company is set up, right? You've got the Comcast piece. You've got Peacock, where they've always been less all in than a Max, for example, or a Disney Plus. So they've decided basically, their strategy is going to be, we want more dollars in a transactional case. And they think that, they didn't say this to me in the interviews, but I inferred that they think just what you said, that the value in terms of getting a streaming subscriber is less for movies. And I think Julia and other people would tell you that that's true, right? That television series in library are actually much more important than new movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, we're in such a weird, it's such a weird time in the business of Hollywood where I think nobody knows, what's the line, the William Goldman line, nobody knows anything. I feel like everybody knows even less than they knew before.
Even less. That's very true.
Because it's really not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even a movie by movie thing anymore. It's an entire business model thing. I mean, I'm sure you read it, but the long piece in New York Magazine about, how the streaming model is broken.
Yeah.
I read that and I'm like, yeah, no, that's basically what I've seen for the last 2 years here. And nobody has any idea how to fix it. It's all bad.
And I was talking to someone this week at lunch who runs a big production company. And she was saying that they just feel exhausted, or that's, speaking for herself, in that, studio as a seller to studios and streaming services, it's like, okay, run this way. No, oh, wait, now we're going to run that way. Now your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. and it's sort of at some point, people are feeling it's pretty bleak out there.
It is definitely wild. I mean, and this is one of the reasons why I was so excited to actually finally see some numbers from Universal, because I do feel like the studios have played all of this so close to their chest that it's kind of hard to judge, how this is working out.
Totally. We have to rely on their hopefully not wanting to get in any shareholder lawsuits for misleading them with these few cherry pick numbers. Right.
Well, I mean, that is something you have to think about as a journalist, right? Like, well, why are they coming to me with these numbers instead of some others? Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And needing to double check it on my own to the degree that I can, talk to other people that they didn't know I talked to, and try to, am I really, what are the trapdoors here? Mm-hmm. Are we setting ourselves up to be used? All of those things are things that I think about. Ultimately, in this case, we felt like, because it was something that I had been trying to pry out for a while, and it didn't all come in one swoop. They said, well, here are a couple things. And I was like, that isn't really good enough. What about, let's look more at the Focus films and how are they doing? And so that made a difference to us, instead of just here's some numbers on a silver platter. Why don't you write those up? Yeah, we yeah. probably don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. The famous datacdotes. Yeah. we all love
yeah.
and pour over. And no, it's interesting. I mean, I assume that they did not betray any sense of trepidation here, but I figure it's worth asking. I look at what has happened with Disney and the performance of Disney's animated theatrical, like, set aside Avatar: The Way of Water, which obviously huge, massive right. hit, is finally on. My kids excitedly called me into the room today or yesterday, and we're like, Dad, look, Avatar, The Way of Water's on Disney Plus. I was like, oh, do you want to watch it? They're like, no, we don't want to watch it. We're going to watch it. I was like, okay, well, that's fine. But
that sounds about right.
The animated features for Disney have all kind of suffered theatrically at the box office. And there's, you can look at any number of different data points and say, well, they aren't as good, or, there was right. the pandemic, or you know, it's hard to separate all that out. But I do think that there is a not small case to be made that the actual act of putting so many movies on Disney streaming in such short order has undercut the ability to sell tickets at the theater.
Tonight in here in LA, they're having the premiere for Elemental, the next Pixar movie, and it's at the Academy Museum. In 15 years, I have never seen Disney not do a premiere at its own theater, the El Cap in Hollywood, right? Maybe it's booked tonight. I don't know that for sure. But what I assume is happening is that they know that they need to elevate that Pixar release. It's something, you know, that's addressing the quality problem or question when you're associating with the Academy, right? It's like, this is art. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the tracking on that movie has been a little soft, and whether it's sort of the squishy reviews that came out of Cannes, whether it's the fact that people have been trained to see Pixar movies on Disney Plus now, you know, it's definitely a challenge for them.
Yeah. I mean, was there any sense of worry on that point from Universal? Because, I mean, look, I look at something like Fast 10 going to PVOD 21 days after release, or I'm pretty sure it was 21 days after release, and thinking to myself, the movie is struggling at the domestic box office. I cannot imagine a universe in which this helps that next entry in the series, but maybe it also doesn't matter that much. Maybe these things are so right. front-loaded that it just doesn't matter.
When you look at the box office performance on a chart, it just falls off like a cliff after that first couple weekends, three weekends mm-hmm. for sure. And I think that they, at this point on some of these franchises, they've started realizing, I mean, it's such fan service at this point, right? That they've almost given up on broadening it out to other audiences. It's like, okay, we're going to load these movies with every little trick or treat that the fans will like, get them out, and then move it into the pipeline to milk it in other ways.
Yeah. Just for clarity's sake, the thing that you mentioned about the box office charts is a real one. What's the percentage of revenue that generally comes in the first 17 days or whatever? It's some enormous percentage.
It's an enormous percent. I'm forgetting what it is exactly, but I do have a couple of things here actually on showing the impact of premium VOD. So for example, let's look at the last Fast movie, F9. When it opened, so it went on to PVOD after 35 days. And after that time, it did 4.4% of its total domestic box office. The previous installment in the Fast franchise never went on to PVOD, didn't exist. It did 4% of its total domestic box office after that 35-day point. So you're dealing with aging franchises and different quality and you know, different stars in some cases, but it's very little ultimate box office after that they throw the lever.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is interesting. Again, the only thing I worry about is training audiences that in the idea that if you're just willing to sit out for that first couple of weeks, you can watch it at home, and that is not ideal.
It's not ideal, but and it's specifically with the focus movies. I mean, one thing I didn't really get into is that those specialty art house movies. Tar was a focus movie, mm-hmm. for example, the coming Wes Anderson movie, and those movies build slowly over time. Typically, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, there's that limited rollout, a few hundred more theaters, a few hundred more. And so if you're telling your audience that, oh, well, you only have to wait a few weeks, that specific, more sophisticated, older audience you know, that is a potential long-term problem in my eye.
Yeah. No, it's a thing I think about a lot. It's a thing I think about more than I should, frankly, since I'm neither a shareholder nor a, you know, studio exec.
Just well, as that's a what fan we count on you for.
just as a fan of theaters, I worry about this sort of thing. So you mentioned, I mean, look, it's a New York Times news story, so you have a limited amount of space. Give me a deleted scene, so to speak, from your, what was something you couldn't get in the piece that you really wanted to?
Well, actually, those percentages didn't get into the story because, you know, it went through the copy editing process, people were very confused about the, you know, can we just simplify this down? I'm like, yes, but I don't want to, you know.
People like, you know, numbers. People want numbers.
It's forever that tug of war between, like, this story is too long. Okay, I'll give you a shorter one. And then, but don't we need to explain? Well, we could, you're not going to get that length. You know, Jurassic World Dominion, here's another stat. It went on to PVOD on day 35, did 5.9% of its box office after that point domestically. Interestingly, the movie before actually did a little bit better. It played exclusively in theaters the whole time. It did 6.6% of its box office after day 35. So not a big difference, but a little dent for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know. All right. I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked. If you think there's something
that's my trick.
Know. About the see, I'm stealing all your tricks. It's an important thing because I think, you know, look, there are things I don't know. What is it? There are known unknowns and there are unknown unknowns. What are my unknown unknowns?
I think that the thing that I found that people were most confused by in both the reader comments and a couple editors in the process was just how many different ways studios still splice and dice this stuff, right? And there's a lot of confusion around just how every studio does it differently. So in Universal's case, they go to theaters, they go to this premium video on demand, they keep playing in theaters, then they go to rental and VOD traditionally at a lower price point. Then they go to streaming on Peacock. Then they go to streaming on Netflix. Then they come back to streaming on Peacock. Yeah. And that's just one studio, right? And the timing is all different. And I think that, you know, if one thing I did hear from Universal people about in terms of a worry is, they framed it differently. They framed it as it would be better for them, and they think the studio system as a whole, if there was more lockstep, if there was, you know, people had the general consumer had a better idea of when things would be available, where and how.
Yeah. No, that makes, I mean, that definitely makes sense. And it's a thing I hear from people all the time who are trying to figure out where a movie is playing, what channel. I mean, set aside the windows, you know, just trying to find the actual channel it's on. Or the streaming service it's on is a enormous headache for lots of folks.
But who knows? I mean, in my conspiratorial thinking, I'm like, they're doing this on purpose. They're making it super confusing, so I just give up searching on what streaming service it's on and just buy it on DVD or buy it on PVOD.
Was there any chatter from the Universal folks about physical media and how that market is either dead or is like just kind of ossified to a point that it's like, well, if we get money from DVD and Blu-ray, that's great.
It really did seem that way. It seemed like, you know, that business is over. Whatever we get is gravy. They were not ready at all to say the same thing about that traditional VOD mm-hmm. business.
That's interesting. That is interesting. And again, as a fan of DVDs, that makes me sad. But well, Blu-rays, but 4Ks, whatever I'm buying now, whatever format I can find it in. All right. Well, that was everything I wanted to ask. Thank you so much for the time, Brooks. I really appreciate it. And there will be a link to the story in the email that goes out with this. So, you know, I hope folks check it out. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'll be back next week with another episode. We'll see you guys then.